This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer questions. Now, the destination for questions is radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is where you email your questions. If you want to record a question for our program, you can go to drhoffman.com. It's our website. And on the homepage on your PC or Mac, you'll be prompted to click on a box which will start the tape rolling for you to record a question. And another thing you can do is you can call us during our live programs on Saturdays from noon to 2 p.m. Information on that show is at drhoffman.com. That's Eastern Time, noon to 2 p.m. If you missed the show, you can always listen to the podcast.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't lose.
Right. We have an email from Tom. Hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for your dedication for producing consistently superb and relevant podcasts.
Oh, that's so
thank
nice
you, Tom.
To hear. That's great.
Yeah. I'm trying to lower my homocysteine in order to avoid being the fourth generation of males in my family to die suddenly and prematurely from cardiac arrest.
So let's speak to homocysteine.
Yeah.
Homocysteine is one of the risk factors for cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm.
That has been a little bit poo-pooed by the medical profession because they did one study where they took people with high homocysteine and they lowered it. It can be lowered very successfully with B vitamins and methyl donors, folate, B6, B12, choline, trimethylglycine. These are the things commonly, and riboflavin too, that are in those formulas to lower homocysteine. And they did not find a benefit in that one relatively short duration study. So they kind of poo-poo the theory that homocysteine has anything to do with heart disease. It does.
It does.
But more importantly, it has to do with risk of dementia.
Yeah.
And it has to do with risk of cerebrovascular disease.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be associated very much with more small vessel disease than the big pipes of your coronary arteries.
Mm-hmm. And also with bone fracture.
And bone fracture, it turns out, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Osteoporosis.
Right. So anyway, so I mean, it's reasonable to try and lower homocysteine. We do it all the time. We try to lower homocysteine.
Mm-hmm. So, based on a show where you had a very excellent guest, Dr. Kara Fitzgerald, who talked about methylation because he has a methylation SNP and his B12 was low and homocysteine needs all of that, he decided to start taking alpha-GPC in order to boost my choline level and hopefully lower my homocysteine further. The problem is that I also have TMA urea for decades. Fortunately, I consider smelling like a halibut at times.
So wait, let's stop. What is that?
Yeah.
So this is a very interesting disorder. I first became aware of it in the 1980s when I had a patient who says, I smell like fish all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, do you eat a lot of fish? Well, I stopped eating fish. I still smell like fish.
Hmm.
And so I said, really? And sometimes we think people who say that, sometimes they actually have almost like a smell version of body dysmorphic disorder. They have like a self-consciousness about their smell. And then I usually discreetly try to smell
in.
Them. You know, and often people with halitosis often say,
I
have a room-clearing halitosis. And I go up to them and it's like,
no, you
I
don't.
Can barely discern that you have that. You're just, you know, you have a little bit of a OCD thing about
it. They're doing this all day long.
Right.
Yeah.
But this person really smelled fishy.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, there's this place that does research on that in Philadelphia. It's called the Monell Institute for Smell and Taste Disorders. And there are people who have distortions of taste or lost their taste or, you know, and I think maybe this is your candidate for that. So they came back with that diagnosis.
Hmm.
I think it was just being recognized that some people have a genetic thing.
Yeah.
And you can explain that maybe. What's the problem?
Yeah, it's abnormal urinary excretion of trimethylamine, TMA, signals the presence of trimethylaminuria, an inborn error of metabolism presenting the body odor of putrid fish.
Okay, and it's very rare.
But it's rare.
You smell fishy. You really smell fishy.
You smell fishy, yeah. And this can...
So...
Yeah. And choline causes that to happen,
right.
Because the choline actually
feeds
that.
There's another interesting thing about that, though. There is this thing that sounds like TMA, but it's called TMAO.
Mm-hmm.
And TMAO is what can't be produced by these people, right?
Huh.
Yeah?
Yeah, because it needs to be converted.
To TMAO.
Right.
Now, TMAO is... You stop smelling fishy, but it puts you at higher risk for cardiovascular disease.
Ah.
So, and TMAO conversion is also governed by gut bacteria.
Yes.
And so, you know, I wonder if there is a potential solution in, you know, dealing with the gut flora,
bacteria.
The microbiome, and maybe using probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you'd have to, another source of choline, by the way, is something that doesn't smell like fish, which is soy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very
rich. Wow.
And by the way, choline is a really important nutrient.
It is.
And some people need more choline. Egg yolks are a source of choline. Mm-hmm. There's some genetic SNPs, which can be now detected and which show a higher requirement for choline, which is better for brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in patients who have dementia or Alzheimer's disease,
they need acetylcholine.
Medication is used to boost choline.
Yeah.
It's these cholinergic meds.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, dietary choline is very important. It's important during pregnancy. We want to give choline.
Yes.
But this person, for sort of cosmetic reasons, can't take choline.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
In
this situation, practically speaking.
Yeah, he's wondering if there's a different approach.
Yeah, the approach is to take everything but choline.
Everything but choline, the B vitamins.
Yeah, betaine,
SAMe is great. SAMe is a great idea.
B12 folate, B6.
Yeah.
And see if you can work around that because, you know, high homocysteine is the result of, it's kind of like saying, how did we get this traffic jam in Queens, where you live?
Yeah.
And it's like, there are a myriad of ways to get a traffic jam in Queens.
Yeah.
You can have an accident on the LIE, you can have an accident on the BQE, you can have an accident on
Queens Boulevard.
You know, Queens Boulevard. You could have a, you know, emergency lockdown situation, police action.
On Northern Boulevard.
Yeah, you know, kind of a hailstorm.
On the Grand Central.
And it will result in the same thing, which is a big traffic jam. So that's what homocysteine elevation is. It's a big traffic jam that occurs when one of the pathways is faulty.
Yes.
And we can sometimes help that pathway, but it could be different strokes for different folks. Like B12 might be the bomb for some people to fix homocysteine, or for other people it might be riboflavin, or it might be choline. Or
Now, Tom had a very low B12 of 200.
Oh, bingo.
So that helped him.
Oh,
so
bingo.
As soon as he started taking
very
it,
low B12.
His homocysteine came
he
down to about
B12
a 10.5.
Malabsorption. Oh, 10.5 isn't that bad.
No, he's got a SNP, the homozygous methylation SNP for B12, the MTH.
MTR.
Yeah.
MTR. Okay.
So he's got that. That's taken care of.
Okay.
Brought the homocysteine down to about a 10.5. Wants to go further. Yeah,
okay.
Betaine, SAMe.
Okay.
These are all good.
What's his name?
His name is Tom.
Tom, please send us a check for $800.
That's
a full consult.
Yeah. Well, Tom also says, I actually feel better after going through the first bottle of the alpha GPC, but it has worsened the TMA urea.
But it's not choline. It's alpha glycerol phosphate. No.
Yeah.
It's alpha glycerol phosphate.
GPC. But it's got some choline in it.
Okay.
Got some choline in it.
Okay.
Because it was,
All right.
So that was a problem. Try SAMe, Tom, and I believe you take SAMe on an empty stomach. A 400 milligram a day you could start
with. It's not alpha-ketoglutarate. It's alpha-glycerol phosphate.
Alpha-glycerol phosphate.
Which has choline in it? Okay.
Okay.
All right. That's a little in the weeds.
Okay.
But there's a rare syndrome. So, like, please don't start sniffing your underarms, everybody, that you think you might have this.
No. It is. We had a couple of patients in the past. I remember them distinctly who had this
problem. Distinctly?
Distinctly. Who had this problem.
You inadvertently punned there.
I know.
You can't help yourself.
I'm so punny.
You can't help yourself.
I can't help myself.
Oh,
I'm so punny.
God,
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, Tom, we don't want you to walk around smelling like a halibut, so try the SAMe.
Yeah.
See what that does to bring the homocysteine down. 10.5, by the way, is pretty good. We know people like Dr. Bredesen want it less than 6.
That's a little exigent.
That could be tough.
Yeah, you know.
I have to look at my homocysteine.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know. That's that. Maybe for someone who's on the path to dementia, you want to be very proactive. But I think people can lead normal lives with a homocysteine of 8 or 9.
Yeah, I would think so. All right. We have an email from Harold. Can Eliquis interact with melatonin and cause bleeding issues? I've been on Eliquis for 2 years.
It should not. I mean, Eliquis is a blood thinner. Yeah. And the thought is that maybe taking a lot of blood thinning things like very high potency garlic or
a whole lot of fish oil.
Ginkgo or, you know, certainly it's often prescribed. I think it's sometimes prescribed with aspirin, you know, as a double sort of double whammy of belt and suspenders. But, you know, not melatonin. Melatonin shouldn't be considered a heavy-duty blood thinner.
No, no. And when I looked up melatonin, it's helpful for a whole lot of different drugs and drug classes where it could save the kidneys in certain situations and help the liver in other situations and so forth.
So but,
melatonin may be...
But here's the thing. you know, they say, give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Teach a man to fish and he'll eat for life.
We're still talking about fish.
I can't get away from fish. But
I had fish for lunch. I think it was halibut.
And you smell fine. But getting away from fish, it's just a saying. It's a saying.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain how people can find out about drug-nutrient interactions?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You can go, well, there are two websites. You can go to drugs.com. It's very comprehensive there. You can also go to Dr. Leo Gallon's website, PillAdvised.
Okay. PillAdvised.
PillAdvised. Right. .com and check there as well.
And so there are probably even more that are out there.
Yes.
They try to keep up with that. Mm-hmm. And you can look it up.
The
problem I have with those websites is they're a little bit too alarmist.
Mm.
So it'll say, oh my God, don't take curcumin with a blood thinner.
Right, and right, like at drugs.com.
A lot of real strong evidence that curcumin normally can mess up a blood thinner. I mean, maybe if you're going to have an operation or something, an abundance of caution, you may say, stop the curcumin during the operation because it might be cause excessive bleeding. But I just don't see a lot of documentation of cases where they show that curcumin was responsible for a bleed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they will err on the side of almost alarmism about the potential for supplements to cause problems.
Mm. That's true.
Yep.
That's true. So, Harold, we hope this answers your question.
Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1. With no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
Here's an interesting one about testosterone replacement therapy. This comes from Michael. Dr. Hoffman, I'm on testosterone replacement. I have been for about 10 years now. Is there any harm in taking supplements such as fenugreek and or DHA, which is said to boost testosterone? I think he means DHEA.
Taking fenugreek is one of those things that purported to raise testosterone, or they're in like...
You have to use a ton of it, I think.
Yeah, there's fenugreek also in a lot of these male potency products, but it doesn't really work that dramatically. And if you're already actually taking testosterone, it's kind of like spitting into a hurricane. I mean, the testosterone is much more potent than the fenugreek, so I wouldn't bother taking the fenugreek. I do have a lot of men on the combination of DHEA and testosterone because I think they do different things.
Mm-hmm.
And while DHEA boosts testosterone, you're taking it while you're taking testosterone would be to sort of broaden your portfolio of androgens because there are
Yeah.
You know, there's testosterone and there's DHEA, that are the main androgens for men. And, you know, some men don't feel well when their DHEA is not replaced. So many of the men, you know, we saw a couple of them today. We have on DHEA and testosterone, both. One in particular, mm-hmm. I mean, I recall seeing him, you know, 10, 12 years ago, and he was really dragging. He was in his 50s. And, you know, he wasn't feeling sexy, and he was very overweight, and he was, like, feeling foggy and sort of loss of joie de vivre. And I said, well, you know, let me do a workup. We found his testosterone was low, his DHEA was low. Mm-hmm. You worked on his diet.
Yeah.
Today he comes in, he's like,
he's fabulous.
He's fabulous. He's like, plus now, even beyond the weight he originally lost, he lost an additional 25 pounds.
Yeah.
And he's older than I am. He's 68 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's extremely dynamic. He's
yeah.
running around and doing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's athletic. So, good story.
Yeah, it's great.
And he's been on testosterone, and his PSA is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good.
It's all good. He's really, when we were actually talking today, he was talking about, I've decided simply to eat right and exercise and just do all the right things. And he went on a cruise with his wife. And I said, a cruise? And you didn't gain any weight? In fact, you lost weight? And everybody's like, yes. He said, you know how I did that? I said, how? When the waiter came, we told them what we wanted to eat,
okay.
and they brought it to us.
Yeah.
And that was all we did.
Yeah, and that's...
We told them what we wanted, and they brought it.
Yeah.
So forget about ogling the huge buffet and all of that at every turn on a cruise,
but they
right?
have to get used to the fact that not everybody there is there for a chow down. You know,
that's true.
Some people are healthy travelers,
mm-hmm.
and they want really high quality food, and that's clean. You know
that, and they took the 14 stair up and down to the 14 decks. They never took the elevator.
You can work out all day long on a boat.
There's
so much gym facilities there. They're now catering. I mean, there's two types of people. People want to, like, sit around and, you know, get soused and, you know, eat all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the sort of the health-conscious travelers, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Doing the right thing. So, Michael, you don't have to be concerned about taking any fenugreek or anything like that.
The only cruise I took, I've only been on a cruise. Well, not counting when I was, like, a hippie and I got on a boat, but I was, like, in steerage in the hold of the boat, you know.
Uh-huh.
With a hammock, not a real bed.
Okay.
That wasn't really a cruise. But I took a cruise with my parents when I was a kid. Now, what happened was I went to Hawaii with them, and I got some kind of bug, and I had, like, really bad stomach problems, and I lost a lot of weight.
Hmm.
So that we flew out by plane. We took a boat back from Hawaii to Los Angeles, and I gained back, like, 10 or 12 pounds on that boat because I by the time I got to the boat, I was like, I'm cured, and... You know, I just ate like a house on fire on that boat.
Wow.
It was good. I regained the other one.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I don't know. I had some like bad pineapple or something in Hawaii.
This was
like 1960 something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When $300 was a lot of money.
1960 or 1962.
Okay. We've got an email from...
I think the whole cruise was $300.
Really? Could be at the time.
Right.
Wow. This comes from Richard. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, perhaps you would like to comment on a meta-analysis showing vitamin D does not perform better than placebo in reducing cardiovascular risk. So this meta-analysis, they looked at more than 83,000 individuals in 21 randomized clinical trials. And what they found... They looked at the literature through PubMed, the Cochrane Library, Embase, all of that. And the inclusion criteria were randomized clinical trials that reported the effect of long-term use, and long-term use meant greater than a year.
So wait a minute, stop.
Yeah.
Greater than a year?
Yeah. Equal to or greater than a year.
Okay, so do you really expect that by taking taking vitamin D for a year, that you're going to have, you know, necessarily major protective effects? I mean, it'd be nice if it were the case.
Yeah.
But I like to see like 5, 10, 15, 20 year studies, which is impractical. So these studies are impossible to do because you have to keep track of people and they have
like
to faithfully follow.
Like the nurse's health study,
They have to faithfully follow it. And how do you monitor them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
So what they found, that in this updated meta-analysis, they found that vitamin D supplementation was not associated with reduced major adverse cardiovascular events.
Okay.
All of that, so, whether it's heart attack, so stroke.
I'm looking at it.
Or all-cause mortality.
I don't know how much vitamin D they got.
Right.
I hope that some of the studies looked at meaningful doses of vitamin D.
Yeah. Like
400 international units.
And hopefully it was vitamin D3.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, was it 200 or 4,000? I'm sorry, it was 2,000 or 4,000 or 5,000
mm-hmm.
even?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other thing is, I now believe that some people have genetic incapability of utilizing normal levels of vitamin
yes.
D. So we'll see people who, like, look at your vitamin D. Like we saw one the other day, your vitamin D was 17.
Yeah.
I said, you take vitamin D? Yeah, she said, I take 1,000 a day.
Mm.
That's considered a good supplementation dose.
Yeah.
The RDA is, I think, is like 800.
Yeah.
So there's some people just genetically incapable. It'd be nice to see if there's the study that I'd like to do is a long-term perspective study, like 5 years, and somebody in the people who have low vitamin D,
mm-hmm.
give them vitamin D. But, you know, it'd be almost unethical to take people and say, oh, you have low vitamin D. We'll just keep you for 5 years on low vitamin D. You can't take vitamin
no.
D. And we'll see if you get
yeah.
cardiovascular disease.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
You know, it mm-hmm. it just would be unethical.
Because it would be.
But that would be a study. I don't think any of these studies are like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here they also say that there was one thing that they, even the authors of the study say,
mm-hmm.
They say that they should investigate higher doses of vitamin D in an older population.
Yes.
Where cardiovascular disease outcomes, such as heart failure, are assessed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing about it is, there's this kind of a technical thing about studies, is you can get a lot of information about studies.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of those studies were about the relationship between vitamin C and cancer, and oh, by the way, they noted cardiovascular disease statistics, but they weren't studying heart disease.
Yeah.
That's considered a flaw in an evidence in mm-hmm. a study because it wasn't the primary endpoint of the study.
Yes.
It was just an ancillary thing that they measured and we got
yeah.
some data, but it wasn't the data that study was designed to assess.
Mm-hmm.
So they said that of all the studies, only 4 studies included in the review had a pre-specified cardiovascular disease as a primary outcome.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. what it was like, how many studies? 21 studies, but only 4 were designed to look
right.
at cardiovascular disease.
So yeah.
I would say, you know, maybe vitamin D can't, you know, wash your windows, bring you the morning paper, and be man's best friend.
Oh, shoot.
You know,
okay.
I'm sorry. but it does a lot of other things.
Yeah.
But we do think that it works on, it's plausible that it works on insulin resistance,
mm-hmm.
and on inflammation.
High blood pressure.
Which has something to do with cardiovascular disease.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah, as well. High blood pressure too. So, and you know, I've even heard Dr. Jeffrey Bland say that meta-analyses really don't tell us much of anything.
Well, there's a lot of potential or bias because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to kind of select studies and supposedly you use objective criteria, but
mm-hmm.
how do you select the objective criteria subjectively? It's a little subjective.
To, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you throw out some studies, you say, well, that's not a good study.
Mm-hmm.
That study was done by a guy with a conflict of interest or something. You know,
mm-hmm.
You could throw that one out.
Right.
But maybe that study was, you know, a positive study about vitamin D, and you
mm-hmm.
threw it out. You found a way to throw it out.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. All right. So, Richard, thank you for...
Don't give up on vitamin D for...
Don't give up on vitamin D. Thank you for sending us this link to take a look at. Take your vitamin D.
No, I've seen the study. I just don't, you know...
Yeah.
I'm waiting for somebody who is a brilliant statistician, which I am not, to look at that study, because it really is an art to dissect and critique studies.
Yeah.
And I can do it to some extent, like I just did, but I think there's some people who really, in a mathematical way, will say, yeah, but, you know, they say that there's no change, but look at this actual data in the study.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes hours and hours of pouring through the actual reports and some of the background data, sometimes requesting additional information to critique a study and say, that's an unwarranted conclusion. Look, you have an improvement. They say, well, you know, it's an improvement, but it's not statistically significant. But so actually, there is a reduction, not associated with MI. Well, I actually found that there was a slight, there was a slight improvement, but it wasn't statistically significant.
That's why it's not really mentioned. If it's not statistically significant. Well, take your vitamin D. And if you're taking vitamin D, take vitamin K, take some magnesium.
Here's one. I mean, other studies related to this. There was a study that showed there was no delay in type 2 diabetes in patients given vitamin D. Here's the thing, you know, with diabetes, patients who have low vitamin D are more prone to diabetes. Why? Because they're obese. Obesity
sequesters the vitamin D.
Right. So So the theory was, if we give vitamin D to these obese patients, it'll fix them. Well, it didn't. In one study. But it may not have been long term enough to see the effects.
Right. So again, flaws in methodology.
Vitamin D supplementation can help cut COPD exacerbations. This is on the same page that they say the vitamin D doesn't work for heart disease. Vitamin D deficiency tied to gestational diabetes risk. Now, that may be association, not causation. It may, you know, we need prospective studies to show that vitamin D is beneficial for gestational diabetes. Or, I mean, certainly beneficial for the baby. Right?
There was a study, I think it was a Scandinavian study, that showed in mothers who during pregnancy had adequate vitamin D levels, as opposed to mothers during pregnancy with deficient vitamin D levels, their offspring had more tendency for autoimmune type 1 diabetes. Diabetes.
There you go.
Juvenile diabetes. So that's very interesting as well.
All right. Well, we're you know, hopefully we answered as many questions as we can today. We've got a couple left over.
Keep sending them, everybody.
Have yourselves a great 4th of July holiday. And we'll be on the case and keep generating podcasts. So keep sending your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Support our sponsors. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter. Subscribe to our newsletter. Both of us write articles for our newsletter. Download our podcasts because they're free. They're available. We enjoy doing them. We want to share them.
Thank you for joining us.
Okay. Declare your independence from dependency on the medical establishment this 4th of July holiday. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.